All right, mute button works. Okay. Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 76, TechEd Australia Recap, Awesomeness Down Under. Here we go. Today, co-hosting with me once again is Simone Bennett. How you doing, Simone?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I've had a hard time scheduling this episode. I've been wanting to do it, but it's been tough to get the schedules to align. So that was, what, 2 weeks ago now? Or a week and a half ago, was it?
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
I was in Russia at the time, and I saw a lot of good tweets coming, and I'm like, man, that looks like a good time. So it looks like, you know, aside from all the social aspects of it, there was...
You need to learn how to filter your hashtags.
Hey now. Well, there's a lot going on. I probably should have. What did I miss? Let me ask you it that way.
What did you miss at TechEd?
Yeah, like when you say, you know, I got to filter my tags. Was there something I should have seen, or is it just that I should have been able to keep my focus elsewhere?
No, I meant like you could filter out all the TechEd tweets.
Oh, no. I want to take it all in. No. It's the other way around.
And then you wouldn't have got bombarded by them.
Yeah, it was a little bit time offset from where I was at, so I could at least, you know, it wasn't in the middle of the day. Joining us today is James Bannon. How you doing, James?
I'm good, thank you, Rick. And you?
I'm awesome. James, can you give everyone a brief introduction of yourself, where you are and what you do, et cetera?
So I'm in Melbourne, Australia, which I think is about as far away from you as it's possible to get. I am a config manager MVP. I'm a tech consultant with a Microsoft Gold partner, do a lot of work in virtualization, deployment, stuff like that, and management. And I was presenting at TechEd Australia and TechEd New Zealand the week before that.
Well, that's great. That's great. And everyone, James is on Twitter at James Bannon, and I'm going to put notes to that on the podcast notes, as well as he writes a blog at jamesbannonit.com. Did I get those addresses right, James?
Perfectly.
Cool. So, you know, both Simone and James, you know, was this your first TechEd Australia or, you know, a repeat affair or, you know, how was it compared to the other ones and, you know, what happened this couple weeks ago?
It was about my fifth or sixth, I think. Prior to attending as a speaker, I used to do a lot of work as media. So I've attended a few of them as a journalist. So I've straddled both sides, light and dark. This year, well, I've obviously very much about Windows Server 2012, Windows 8, and everything that's new in that space, and pretty much everything is new. I was presenting quite a bit, so as a result, I didn't actually get to attend much in the way of sessions, which is always a bit of a shame. So, Simone, I think you got to attend a lot more than me.
Yeah, I went to sessions all day long while you were off preparing your talks.
Now, what I've noticed is, you know, the TechEd Australia event was really unique in that Windows Server 2012, Windows 8, let's just say Windows Server 2012 was GA, right? So I went to TechEd Europe and TechEd North America, and it was just a continuation of, like, almost the world's longest product launch ever, right? Because it wasn't yet GA. Sure, it was beta, RTM, or, you know, release candidate, whatever, but it was not quite GA. It is GA now. So, you know, when you guys were talking to people in System Center, right, James, and your family of products that you really specialize in, that's been GA for a while, okay? So
yes, that's right.
Now we're at a point where are people moving up to 2012, the whole family? I think, I know in my environment, I am in the process. I'm not done, but I am. So you guys kind of had it a little bit different. So Simone, you're kind of the least dark side of the group here. would you be compelled to go ahead and upgrade to Windows Server 2012 straight away?
Actually, I am looking at deploying a file server. I was actually looking at starting today just for the dedupe because it's got native dedupe built in. So Yeah, I was looking at deploying Server 2012 today.
I like that dedupe, by the way. I think Microsoft have been incredibly ambitious on their goals, right, with this family of releases. And I'm also going to put Windows 8 in it also, because they're going after the device, right? They're going after the iPad. They're going after VMware with Hyper-V. They're going after some storage technologies as well, right? Because the dedupe engine of Windows is really good. I'm loving what I'm seeing, and I've been using it, and I find myself quickly forgetting about missing the start menu. So, you know, that was the least of my concerns. I thought that would be a big deal for me, but I'm doing fine.
I'm not really coping with Windows 8 funny, without the start menu.
Funny you say that. I'm okay on the server, but on Windows 8, I'm not going to lie. I have two hard drives on my PC. This is my PC at home. I was running Windows 8, and I moved it back to Windows 7.
Yeah, I'm tempted to do that too, but I'm trying to persevere.
Nice, nice.
I find that really interesting, actually, because I upgraded my main presentation and lab laptop to Windows 8 just about maybe a month and a half ago. And that was a big step for me because that's got all of my labs running on it on Hyper-V. So prior to that, it was running 2008 R2. And I thought, do I really want to move to Windows 8 this close to TechEd where I have to rely on everything? I thought, yeah, you know what, I may as well give it a go. And
get some nerd code when you get there.
Yeah, pretty much. It's all about the geekdom. But A, it worked perfectly, and B, the new interface, the lack of start menu, I don't notice it anymore because I either work on the classic shell, and the new interface is not in the way, and when you need it, there it is. So maybe it's a familiarity thing, or maybe it's a case of it really depends on what you use it for. But I've actually found it not a problem.
I was almost going to stay on it, except I had a couple apps that weren't there yet. And the PC that I switched back was a lot of it was kind of a power user workstation for me, right? I did a lot of, I used a lot of applications, so typing, you know, and a lot of things. And I'm a keyboard shortcut junkie. Luckily, a lot of the keyboard shortcuts still work. But I'm probably going to move the work laptop, you know, and then one or two of the home systems. I'm going to have to. And I really like the Hyper-V engine on Windows 8 Pro. That's, like, so cool because it's literally the same technology that is on Server 2012 with Hyper-V. So, James, do you use any of that virtualization technology?
I use all of it. So all of my labs for TechEd sat on the laptop. Within Hyper-V. So I was able to migrate them all off 2008 R2 and onto Windows 8, which was really cool. And yeah, it's lacking a few things. So it doesn't do Hyper-V replication or remote FX, stuff along those lines. But to be honest, I mean, hey, it's a laptop.
Right.
You know, there's only so much it's really going to do. But, I mean, if I really wanted to, you could run Server 2012 on a laptop. A couple of colleagues of mine do actually do that, and it works really well.
Well, you know, you mentioned remote FX and replication, but one important thing that the Windows 8 Hyper-V engine does provide is dynamic memory. So, you know, you do have that memory management technique available on the client because, you know, chances are you don't have an infinite amount of memory on a Windows 8, especially, say, for example, a portable system. So you really can still get a lot of functionality with that. I'm going to do a shameless plug here because I can. But anyways, myself and a couple other people are writing a book on Windows 8, and I was invited, to write the virtualization chapter on Hyper-V, and I was really impressed with the capabilities of it. Once I kind of sat down and played with every bit of the functionality, I'm like, yeah, this is some serious capability built right into the, you know, your normal climate client computing environment. And then I about fell out of my chair when I heard that Surface will support Hyper-V. Did you hear
it's
that?
It's pretty nice.
That's scary.
It's pretty nice. So you could run, in theory, an Android emulator on a Surface.
Why would it?
You could. I mean, but why would you want to do that?
Again, geek cred, no other reason.
Oh, right.
Totally useless, but it's just more to post up the screenshot
just
that,
like,
hey, look what I did.
Check me out.
Exactly. I have too much time on my hands.
I said nerd cred before, is that wrong?
No, that's exactly
right.
Everybody
knows I'm an imposter now.
I've never heard that term north of the equator, sorry.
What, imposter?
No, nerd cred.
Some cred.
I get it, but, you know, your jokes, I just don't get them, guys.
Sorry.
I'm just messing with you.
Maybe I'm just not as hilarious as I think I am.
No, you are. You're good. So, how about the social part? You know, anytime you get a bunch of nerds together, there's going to be amazing parties. Did you guys have some good times?
Yeah, well, we had the AU TechEds party.
Yes, I saw
that. That went well, I think.
Cool.
Lots of pizza and beer and prizes and stuff, so that turned out pretty well. And then they had the TechEd events. I didn't go to them, so I can't really comment.
So, like, the official party, is that what you mean? Where was it? Where was the official party at?
At the convention center. I think they had laser tag and dodgeball and comedy and, like, live music and stuff all in the convention center.
Okay. Well, I guess they made the best of that. In TechEd US, they took everyone to one of the parks in Orlando, Florida. Universal Studios, I think. They kind of, like, rented out the whole park. That was baller. Even though it was raining, it was still pretty cool. I enjoyed it. I like a good party. You know, sometimes, you know, VMworld does, they usually prefer the kind of the
rock
concert.
Yeah, they always have, like, amazing people playing and stuff at VMworld.
You know, it's hit or miss. Now, I can appreciate that they always end up getting a big name, but if you have to pick one, it's hit or miss on if you're going to like it. In fact, I did not go to the Bon Jovi concert this year. Partly because I had a speaking session the next morning and I wanted to save my voice and, you know, ensure that I got adequate rest and proper hydration, etc. But I didn't go to it. But last year with the Killers, oh, that was amazing. But on the flip side, every time I go to, like, VMworld Europe, those parties are just a little bit different. I don't fit into that Euro party scene.
So many things going through my head right now.
But I like it when the big events have a party. I really do. I think it's a good reward for the attendees. And, you know, to me, they start feeling the same after a while. But every now and then I'll see a good one that I'm like, wow, that's pretty baller. So anyways. So James, you know, TechEd's over. The dust is settled. You're back to the grindstone. You're working. You're getting everything done. What's the big thing? Is it, you know, spreading the good word of System Center 2012 and, you know, Windows Server 2012, getting it out there and that kind of stuff? Is that really what's on your plate now?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that going on. A lot of it's actually prepping for System Center 2012 Service Pack 1, because that's where the support and management for Server 2012 comes in. Config Manager 2012 SP1 is a fairly big one in my world. That's got quite a number of new features in it, which a lot of customers are fairly excited about. Stuff like being able to do cross-platform management of OS X and Linux and Unix, which has been interesting because most Config Manager administrators and architects I know have very little experience with Mac or Linux or Unix. I'm the same, so everyone's needing to skill up very, very fast. But, of course, planning on deploying Windows 8, so all the changes with the automated deployment kit. There's a number of changes under the hood. We can now spin up storage points on Windows Azure, which is pretty cool, and there's going to be connectivity in with Windows Intune as well. So Microsoft's management story around mobile and cross-platform is changing quite a lot, and it's quite good for people like me that Config Manager is front and center of that new story. So yeah, a lot going on. Almost too many things to keep track of. But I mean, hey, I'd rather be flat out than bored.
Understood. I remember when I first heard of the cross-platform capabilities, which for me was during a keynote of MMS last year in Las Vegas, I think approximately April. And they mentioned this cross-platform management capability for SCCM. And I'm like, I just thought at first, I'm like, oh, I'm thinking it's just some miscellaneous checkbox, but how sophisticated is that management capability? I'm actually thinking it's probably a lot more capable than I think. I mean, is it a serious amount of management for like Linux and Apple OSs, or is it just really kind of version 1-ish?
Look, it's definitely version 1, but even what's in version 1 is not too bad. So for Mac OS X and for a few flavors of Linux and Unix, you get a native agent, which is, at the moment, it's a manual install, which is fine. But that gives you the ability to do hardware and software inventory, configuration management, and software distribution. So you can manage updates as well. So if you don't necessarily have a management infrastructure for anything other than Windows, you actually get quite a lot out of what is essentially an update to a product you already own. There's enough in it for it to be a completely new product, really, but it's just SP1, which is pretty cool. I think the result of putting so much into it has meant that the expected RTM has been pushed out a little bit further beyond what people might have liked. So at this stage, it's going to be early 2013. A number of people hoped it would have been nearer to around a time that Windows 8 goes GA. But no, it's a serious amount of coding under the hood. And Microsoft now have Mac teams and Linux teams on board to get stuff working. So yeah, I mean, from having no management story, now there's a proper one. So no, it's a serious undertaking.
Simone, in your experience, have you always had like the little offshoot, you know, users that were Mac or Linux, like a graphics team or something like that, you know, that might have only been 2% of your user base? Have you had those situations?
Actually, most of the places I work are just big corporates, not without too many creative people, so I haven't had that much, like, Mac.
Would you like to rephrase that?
Yeah, you made that sound way nicer than I think the reality is.
No. A lot of my friends who are artists and stuff use Macs, but not all the people I work with don't, so I haven't had to worry about that too much as an admin. We do have Linux servers and stuff, but they're servers, you know, so you don't really need to manage them necessarily. There's a Linux admin who does that.
That's really similar to me when I was, you know, before the dark side, as James set the precedent. But I had maybe one or two Mac, like graphic designers. You know, they'd actually have a PC and a Mac, right? So, you know, I had a little bitty offshoot. But, you know, now, today, and I think the kind of brick-and-mortar IT, you know, that kind of place that Simone and I historically have come from, that type of infrastructure, especially on the client side, is at risk. And, you know, you have to enable the bring-your-own-device phenomena and, compute from anywhere. Or, you know, we have the technologies in place that the device really doesn't matter, right? We can deliver the apps a lot of different ways, web apps, virtualized apps, et cetera, et cetera. So having a management framework, this is really kind of one of those prerequisite steps to ensure that we have the maturity we need for our infrastructure. So I'm really excited for this. It's going to become a more critical space over the years, so I'll probably track you down in a year or so, James, have you back on and you know, see what you're seeing at the time.
Yeah, no worries. Love to.
Awesome. Well, the other big news, of course, with any tech ed and Microsoft community event is, you know, Hyper-V on the server side. So, you know, have any of you given some good, serious looks at Hyper-V at the moment?
Yeah, well, I've always used VMware, and we're starting to reevaluate whether we upgrade VMware and renew our licenses or go back to the drawing board and start again with Hyper-V. And it definitely has a lot more features now that, you know, made it that... Let me try that again. Definitely has a lot more features now that weren't in there before. You know, things that made it unsuitable for corporate environment, a big corporate environment. So, some of that management's been built in now. Mm-hmm. I can't do this, Rick. I'm too tired. Go, James. Say something eloquent.
Okay. Never underestimate the quality of the audio edit.
So. Excellent. Well, I've actually... from a virtualization perspective, I jumped in with Hyper-V back when it was beta in Server 2008, and it's all I've ever used. And to be honest, VMware for me is something that happens to other people. And yeah, well,
something that other
say?
People love. It's awesome.
Yeah, and you pay for your addiction too. You like
it
Mac
works.
Users.
That's so cool. You get what you pay for, James.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to invite him back. Oh, man.
Mac user. Anyway.
Yeah,
no, but...
kiss my... Oh, this is breaking up.
Oh, dear. No, but the good thing for me, of course, is that with the latest release, I mean, it's been improving edition after edition. Microsoft's obviously been going after VMware very strongly. And Server 2012, it certainly seems to be the edition where people are now talking seriously that they might have actually done that. Certainly Microsoft have now explicitly come out and said that they believe that Server 2012 Hyper-V is feature for feature, as good, if not better than VMware. Now, you know, obviously there's an element of marketing there, but they generally don't say stuff like that unless they feel they can back it up in some way. And look, certainly most of the customers that I did deal with, regardless of whether they're on VMware or anything else, are really quite excited about Hyper-V on Server 2012, even if they've never looked at it in a previous server version. So look, it's definitely a bit of a game changer. It's shaking things up. To what extent it will have an impact remains to be seen. It's still very early days, but there's certainly a huge amount of interest.
Well, I think that the big thing to note here is the end result is that virtualization customers between the two frameworks have a better offering at the end of the day, right? You've seen this happen. Hyper-V is getting better. You know, VMware is pushing these features left and right. And then they're also, but they removed VRAM, right? So that was a big, big step, I think. So a lot of people might use that as leverage to stay with VMware or possibly, you know, impact their decision because the VRAM licensing model was not popular. So a lot of things have happened in the last, like, 18 months, but I think the end result is that the technologies are getting better. So that's really what we want. And honestly, I personally think that there's room for both. So I think that, you know, as a whole, I don't even think the world has just crossed the half, just crossed 50% virtualized, I think, in terms of server workloads. So depending on what number you look at. But there is room for both. Okay. You're probably laughing at the tweet. Sorry about that. Anyways, so now I'm going to wrap up. And, James, I'm going to put you on the hot seat for my little gimmick of the podcast. It's called Three Views from You. I'm going to ask you three questions, one set in the past, one set into the present, and one looking into the future. So let's start with the past. So, James, in your professional experience, do you have any good story or good experience that you could share that you think would be something that really helps us identify with the technologies you like?
Yeah, I think so. So a company I used to work for was a private school, about 1,100 seats. I know by American standards that's nothing, but in Australia it's actually it's a reasonable size. And we were definitely stuck in the past. We're a Novell environment, if you can remember who Novell were, and running Windows XP. And the way that our fleet changeover was occurring one particular year, it was assessed that it would take us probably about the same amount of time to ditch the entire environment and move to 2008.02 and Win 7 across the board than it would to build XP images for a Novell environment. So we decided to take that plunge, and simply by having access to information available on TechNet, we were actually able to make that move. Config Manager played quite a large part of it, which is the point I realized what a valuable tool it was. And, yeah, I've never really looked back.
Time warp technology, right there.
Pretty much.
Awesome. How about right now? What's going on technology-wise that you have the most passion for in what you do? Is there any particular technology that really is the front of your game?
It sounds boring, and I don't mean to be, but look, definitely Config Manager 2012. But for the main reason that a lot of customers are really only just now being able to make the move from XP. It's taken a lot of people a long time, and some people still haven't got there. And when you come in front of them with a product like 2012 and you show them what a management infrastructure could be, and you can see just how they understand just how much time they are wasting every day doing boring and repetitive tasks on a platform which is nearly end of life and really needs to die quick.
Yeah.
As soon as you show them that and they go, wow, okay, we want this now, that this is going to change the way we work, I really love that. I like the feeling of being able to show people a better way to do things.
How about going into the future? What do you see longer term as something that you expect to have interest in?
I have avoided the whole public cloud, private cloud, hybrid cloud, bring your own cloud, whatever it is, to date, simply for that reason that even people who talk about it, you get the distinct impression that even they don't know what it is. I think with the latest range of server products and client products and management products, it's slowly becoming a bit clearer that in 12 months, 18 months, as administrators, as integrators and architects, the concept of on-premise or off-premise won't really mean much. We'll just talk about managing resources, and where they sit is pretty much irrelevant. And once that takes hold and we can start looking at doing big infrastructural projects in operational expenditure rather than capital expenditure, it's going to change the way a lot of businesses work, a lot of customers work. It's going to introduce a lot of corporate mobility and elasticity, and I think it's going to be a very exciting time to be working in IT.
Outstanding. Well, hey, Simone, thank you so much for hosting again.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me on.
And James, best of luck with the new technologies. I appreciate you taking the time on this late Monday night in Australia, early morning for me, and make it a great week, everyone.
Thank you.
even though I'm a VMware lover.
Lover.
Otherwise, not lover. Not really, otherwise. Don't you dare. If I listen to this and there's me going, lover, you're in trouble. Big trouble.